Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And boy, do we have a special guest today. She is New York Times bestselling author many, many times over, Mary Higgins Clark. She's like a national treasure. Her new book is Daddy's Gone Hunting. It's a novel. It's got a red shoe on the cover. I love the red shoe. Hello.
Hello, David. How are you?
Hi. This has a red theme to it, and red's my favorite color. You're wearing red on the back of the book. There's a red shoe. Is red your favorite color?
Yes, it actually is my favorite color. It's bright, it's happy, it wakes you up, it makes you think, you know?
Yes, you always have the most beautiful pictures on your books. I love, that's one of the fun things about picking up your book, looking at and see what you're wearing this time.
Well, you know, a French photographer has been coming over for nearly 25 years to take my picture, and he always makes me look so good. I hope that people are not disappointed when I show up.
You always look so happy, and I love seeing that. I mean, who doesn't want to see a happy face when they pick a book up?
Well, by the time he takes the picture, the book is finished. I'm happy.
That's right. Daddy's Gone Hunting. This is such a great book. I mean, I was reading this the other day, and I just sit and so enjoy reading your books. You know, every one of them, I just love reading them.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I enjoyed writing this book. I've always been interested in memory and suppressed memory and inaccurate memory. And in fact, there was a study in Sweden. From the time babies could talk, they would talk to them and ask them their memories of their birthday or, you know, a particular holiday. And they did it for 21 years, and they recorded them. And then when they asked them the same questions when they were 21, all the memories were inaccurate.
Wow.
Oh, cool. Isn't that an absolutely fascinating premise, you know? And a repressed memory, where you're forced to repress memory. And I do know that, well, you know that book, Proof of Heaven.
Oh, yes.
When he's supposed to be in a coma, he's experiencing another life. And I do think that people in comas can often hear everything that's said, even though they can't communicate.
And that comes into play in your book, the coma part and being able to hear. I love that part of the book where you actually see what she's... I don't want to give too much away for people who haven't read it, because it's such a great book. It'd be a shame to give anything away.
Thank you very much.
You always write...
And I loved having that Vietnam debt in it, too. You know, because we still have Vietnam vets in the streets and never able to make peace with life.
Right.
And I just enjoyed having that character in the book.
That is a wonderful character. It's a shame the things that happened to him. It's amazing how complex this book really is. I was reading it, I'm thinking, well, there's a lot to this book. There's a lot of different things happening in this book, and how are they all going to come together? Am I sure she's going to do it this time? Am I sure they're all going to come together, or am I going to get to the end of the book and not quite understand what's all going on? But I always do with your books.
Well, good. But did it come together for you?
Oh, absolutely. I was surprised. I had no idea where it was going. Which makes it a lot more fun to read.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, the thing about a mystery is, people say to me, well, didn't you figure it out so far into the book? And I say, no, I like to play along. I don't like when I can figure out a book before it ends. Do you?
Well, when I was a little kid, I loved to read mysteries. And I didn't know it, but I was teaching myself how to write because I wanted to be the first one to know that sentence means something. This is important. This looks important, but it's not important. So I didn't realize it, but I was teaching myself how to write suspense from the time I was little. And I love to be fooled. If I can read a book and be mad at myself at the end because I went down the wrong trail, I say, now that's a darn good book.
There was a book by Ann Perry that I read. It's one of the few books that I read. And it had something to do with a violin being taken on a bus. And I still remember today that I figured out the book before it ended. And I was kind of disappointed. Like, where do I go from here? I already know the ending. And there's that fear that I'm going to find out the end before I get to the end. And I don't like that.
No, you don't like that. You want to suspect toward the very end, maybe, and then feel vindicated when a few pages later he's the guy who did it.
You always leave clues in your books, though, don't you?
Excuse me?
You always leave clues in your books, though, every book along the way.
Of course.
Yeah.
You cannot cheat the reader. I mean, you've got to be fair with the clues, and you've got to give enough information that it is a logical end. You know, there's nothing worse than a book that it takes 12 pages of explanation as to why the butler did it. You know, that's a bad book. The book should naturally be unfolding. And I always feel as though everybody knows something, but they don't know what they know. And if everyone opened her hand or his hand, they could put all they knew together and they would have solved the puzzle.
That's
interesting. Everybody has a piece of information, and they're not aware of it.
Now, reading the title, Daddy's Going Hunting, people will think, oh, it's a book about hunting. Somebody's going hunting. But hunting doesn't come into play in the book at all.
Well, you know, I always, for years I did an excerpt from a song or the title of a song.
Right.
It started, my God, 35 years ago. And the last one, The Lost Years, was incidentally his number one, April 7th, on the paperback list. Yes.
Congratulations. That's got to be a great feeling, by the way.
Yes, it is a great feeling. But the usually I have used something from a song. And for some reason, Daddy's Gone A-Hunting has been haunting me. And it's a 16th century nursery rhyme, and it's four lines, by baby bunting, daddy's gone a-hunting. And there was, the next two lines change in many versions, but the one I loved was, to find a wisp of rosy cloud to wrap his baby bunting in. And I thought if you start with a child watching her beautiful 28-year-old mother dressed in a red gown and red satin slippers, and the handsome father comes in, and that's the song he always sings to her, and swoops her up and dances her and her mother around. And the next night the mother's killed in an accident, and he never sang that song to her again. It's the theme of the whole book.
And
why didn't he?
It's fascinating to listen to you. I mean, I don't know how a genesis of a novel takes place in your mind. I mean, how did this book come to you? I wonder where it comes into your mind. I mean, and it's so complex. Do you know the whole story before you start writing?
Oh, no. And I always throw out, sadly, the first 4 months and start all over again. I started it, well, it was April, and in June I started it again.
Why was that?
Because it wasn't working the way I was telling it. You know, you would think that after all these 42 or 3 books, when I start I am sure and definite. But it's not like that. It just isn't like that. You're pushing a peanut up the mountain with your nose.
Exactly.
And then you get to the top of the mountain and dive into what looks like a puddle and hope that you don't hit hard ground.
Right.
It just isn't that simple.
Well, as I'm reading this book, I'm thinking, boy, this could not have been an easy book to write. It had to be complex because there's so many things going on. The detail has to be perfect. I mean, the reader has to understand every detail of the book, which means you have to make sure that every sentence sounds good, every sentence. And that can't be easy to do.
No, it isn't. And as you say, the book has rather more characters than I usually have. But the idea, you know, when someone is missing, that's something else. A girl has been missing for 28 years, and she's always going to be 22. And the mother always leaves the light on for her just in case she
right.
comes home that night. And that happened when, who was that guy, Ted, who murdered so many girls?
Ted Bundy?
Yes.
Ted Bundy, yeah.
And, you know, he started in Seattle and ended up in Florida. And he was still spitting out the names of girls he had killed when they executed
him. Wow, that's horrifying.
He was offering one more name and one more name. And finally, they just said enough, because they carried out the sentence. Ted Bundy. But I remember reading that one couple and their daughter had gone out for a walk to visit her friends, and she was 17 years old, and for years they had left the light on for her at night. And that night, the night he was executed, and he had given her name, they turned off the light.
Wow. That's pretty powerful. What an image that is. And you're good with images in your books. It's things that stay in our minds, little things that happen.
When the mother in this book learns that they have found the girl's skeleton, the first thing she does is turn off the light, because there's no use leaving it on any longer. And, yes, those symbolic gestures are people have, you know, if someone is missing. Yeah. There's never closure.
After all these years, after all these books that you've written, have you grown tired of writing at all?
No, I love to write. I finished this book in early January, and then you do the page proofs, you know, the usual.
Right.
And I haven't been writing since then. I've just been catching up on mail. We went on vacation, you know, for a couple of weeks down to Florida, and I haven't written, but now I'm restless to get going.
Right. Do you have an idea for the next book already?
Oh, yeah. I have an idea for the next book. It's still vague. It's still... And oddly enough, the first chapter of the book that I wrote for last year and then did not use actually belongs in this book, not in the last book.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, we know what it's not going to be called, because you mentioned in the front that you were going to pick a title. Michael had a title for you, and you said, no, I already used that title.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, that was funny. But yeah, you read that in the acknowledgments.
Mary, I read all of
that. I have the perfect title, Mary.
I never miss it.
I said, Michael, I think, he said, I would certainly remember it. I said, Michael, I don't know. I think I used that.
I always read your books. You know, I read your book cover to cover every time.
Well, that's very flattering, and I mean that.
Yeah.
It is very flattering. If, you know, a book critic, especially who's inundated with books, says, I read the book from cover to cover. That's pretty darn nice to hear, I'll tell you that.
I lost track of how many of your books I've read, but I think it's all but a couple. There's only a couple I haven't read, one of which was the one last year. I haven't gotten to that one yet for some reason. But I just enjoy every one of them. I mean, I can still remember today reading Where Are the Children and seeing that mitten on the cover. I still, that was how many years ago?
That came out in 75.
75. I still remember to this day how scared I was looking at that cover and thinking, oh my gosh, why is there a mitten laying on the ground?
Yeah. Well, that was a wonderful cover. Wendell Minor, and he and I have done two children's books together.
Ah.
But that was a wonderful cover. He did five covers for me.
Are you going to do more children's books?
We want to do another one. Yeah, we enjoy doing them. Of course, for me, it's easy to write the story. It takes him a year to do the illustration.
Wow, really?
I can write the story in about 20 minutes. Once we agree on what the story will be about, you know, the theme of it.
Are you artistic? Can you draw?
Excuse me?
I said, are you artistic at all? Can you draw?
Oh, my God, no. I have no talent whatsoever except to tell a story. Mother St. Jane said, Mary, why don't you do your homework during art class? And I remember the fifth grade teacher, we had to do a poster, Keep Them Flying. You know, it was during the war. I was in school during the war.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, grammar school. And it was a plane with a flag wrapped around it. You know, that was the thing, Keep Them Flying. And the teacher said, held it up, and she said, who did this rag with a bullet going through it? My painting.
Well, at least, I mean, you know where your strengths lie, and that's important, you know, to know that. I mean, we're not all artists, and we could never be artists.
All my eggs went in one basket at writing. I mean, I cannot sing a note, and both my brothers had beautiful voices. They were the leads in the school play, and I cannot carry a tune. I tried the piano, the young beginner, the middle-aged beginner, the old beginner, and I still can't use two hands on the piano.
But you are so well-loved by your fans, and you are simply the nicest author that I've ever met anywhere,
Well, you know, I never can understand how an author can be rude to the people who are willing to stand online.
Absolutely.
And buy their books and take a moment to say that they enjoy them, and or take a picture with them. For the few seconds it takes, when people who are the very people who make you able to buy the house or the car, and then to insult them or walk out because it's you're signing from 1 to 2 and there are still people online,
right,
and walk away from them, I'm appalled. I'm absolutely appalled by it.
Right. Well, you certainly must have been brought up right, because you have the, you're, if there's an angel on earth, it's you, Mary. You really are a sweet, sweet human being. I tell everybody that because it's absolutely the truth. Every time I've ever seen you, you've been the same way. You've been sweet. You even tell me the titles of your next books, and it means a lot to us.
Well, you know, if I had the title of my new book, I would tell you. I know the theme of it, but the title just, you know, sometimes the title comes before the book, as in last year. The year before, you know, the one, The Lost Years, the one that's just out in paperback, that I thought, there is no way that it can be a song title. This is about the lost years, and it was the proper title for it. This year, I don't have it yet because the book hasn't formed enough in my mind.
Right. Will it be? Do you think it'll be a song title, though?
Excuse me?
Do you think it'll be a song title eventually, though?
If I find one that is appropriate, sure.
Maybe I can think of one and help you out. But your books always have something to do with the plot, though. You can't just take a...
Oh, it has to be tied into the plot.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny? Remember me. I hadn't gotten permission to use the lines of the song. I thought my agent had. My agent thought the publisher had. The publisher thought I had.
Oh.
If they hadn't, if Gene Autry Productions owns the rights to Remember Me.
Oh, okay.
No, not Remember Me. What the heck is it? You Belong to Me.
Oh, right,
Belong
right, yes.
To Me. And thank God they sold me the rights, because the whole book was predicated on the guy committing a murder by each stanza of the song.
Wow.
And if they had said, no, you can't do that, I would have lost the book and a year's work and a lot of money. I said, Lord, I'll never do that one again.
Amazing how a little thing can overturn the apple cart, you know, one little thing.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, it wasn't even with a title or a line from the song. It was all the stances of the song. You know, he murders someone in a forest wet with rain,
right.
Someone from the aeroplane, You Belong to Me. So he follows the pattern of the song, and then they said, well, where's the permission slip? What permission slip? I threw myself on heaven. I said, please let them sell me the right.
Yeah, you have such a wonderful sense of humor, too, and it's good to see. It's good. Are we going to see Elvira and Willie again, or are they...
Oh, sure. Oh, of course. You know I love Elvira.
Oh, well,
she's not in this book. She was in the last two. And what's nice is that, you know, Carol and I wrote 5 Christmas books together, and 4 of them have Elvira with Carol's character, Reagan Riley.
Right.
And Hallmark is doing a pilot for a series.
Really?
With Reagan Riley and Elvira Meehan solving crimes together.
Isn't that amazing? Oh,
isn't that great?
Tell Carol, yes. I said hello, by the way. I haven't talked to her in years.
Oh, I shall tell her that.
She's as sweet as you are.
yeah, that's
Well, when are we going to see that, do you think? When will it actually be on the air, do you think?
Well, they're going to be filming pretty soon. They're doing that, and they're doing a pilot for My Gal Sunday as well from Hallmark.
Well, you got a lot of good things going on. This is terrific.
Yeah, and they're doing three. They're doing in French. They're doing three films.
I wonder who's going to play Reagan Riley and who's going to play Elvira. I'm curious.
Oh, we don't know. We don't know yet. But it's funny. Years ago, Jean Stapleton wanted to, and she was really very disappointed that CBS wouldn't do it for her. But the reason was the murder she wrote was on. And they didn't want two 60-year-old women detectives.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Darn it.
Yeah, it wasn't on shame. I mean, I just have had no luck I've had 16 television films and two feature films. And the Times asked me, which one is your favorite? And I said, I'm still waiting.
Is that right? But you're so honest. You're so brutally honest. I like that about you. I mean,
there's never been one that I said, oh, that was really, that's the story I wrote. Because, of course, it all has to do with budget.
Right. What's left for you to do that you haven't done already? Is there something that's in your mind that you'd love to do and haven't done yet? There's got to be something.
Actually, if I were unrealistic, I'd say to learn to play the piano and sing along to.
And draw while you're
tune.
And draw
that's
too.
That's very unrealistic.
Really?
I do want to get smarter on the computer. I treat it as a word processor, and on the internet, I'm going to take lessons because I am still so clinically stupid about it that it's really unforgivable and it's unnecessary. I mean, certainly I'm no techie, but there are some things that I honestly think I could manage if my I don't have a 3-year-old anymore, the youngest is 6-year-old grandson, if he can go on and do things for me, then it seems to me that even this rather tired brain could figure out some of this stuff.
Now, I should mention that Daddy's Gone Hunting is from Simon & Schuster. I don't know if I mentioned that. But you have a thing going online where if there are 1,000 books pre-sold, that people will get to read the first couple of chapters. Tell me about that.
Well, I just did it the other day. Well, they do some, I think, do they do it at the back of the paperback? I'm not sure. Maybe they do, and I just did something that will be online where I read about 8 pages of the book. I just did that yesterday.
Oh, really? So we get to hear your voice?
They see me. I think they put a link on where I'm sitting reading those 8 or 10 pages and then answering questions about the book, and there's one for Mother's Day where I answer questions about Mother's Day.
You're such a busy lady. You're the Betty White of writing here.
Well, now I get busy. You know, when a book is coming out, thank God, you know, that they want me on some of the shows and doing things, because you have to help the publishers to sell the books.
Absolutely. Now, we should mention that the book comes out April 9th, just in case somebody's hearing this interview before the book. It'll probably
air. It comes out on that Tuesday, April 9th.
Right in time for tax season. You usually have a tax season book.
Listen, I just got my account, an accountant had messed up my income tax. I just got a bill. I thought I fainted. I fainted when I got it. That I had underpaid 1 year. So we went to the IRS with it, and I looked at it and said, oh, my God. I never thought when we lived over the tailor shop after my father died that I would get a bill like this from the IRS.
what makes you happy, Mary? What makes you... Tell me some of the things that make you the happiest.
Certainly my family. I've been so blessed with a wonderful family. My friends doing what I love to do. You know, there's a saying, if you want to be happy for a year, win the lottery. If you want to be happy for life, love what you do.
Wow.
And I have always loved what I do. And frankly, I am a woman of faith. I'm a devout Catholic. And I think anyone whichever religion, who is devout and it's a meaningful part of their lives, has a secret of great contentment.
Right, exactly. When you walk down the street, do people recognize you? Do people come up to you and say, oh, you look familiar, or I've seen you on a book?
Yes, I do get a lot of that, which is, you know, you look familiar. Are you Danielle Steele?
Did they really say that to you?
Occasionally I hear that. They do. But mostly they know.
Mostly
they know it's me, you know.
Getting back to Daddy's Gone Hunting, though, the very last line of the book is so satisfying. I don't want to read it because I think I'll give something away, but that very last line is really quite extraordinary.
Well, it says it all, doesn't it?
It does. But if I say what it is, I think I'll give something away, and I don't want to do
right.
that.
What it is a promise.
Mm-hmm. It is. And that's what I love about your... One of the things I love about your book, those visual things that always seem to come into play in the books. And it's so important that the characters are real, that the situations are real, and that those little things mean a lot. And everything's got to mean something.
Everything has to mean something. And people have hard times, and they get through them. And, I mean, in that book... Both girls had a pretty unhappy growing up, you know. And then when it looks as though the one girl is going to be accused of arson and murder, really, if your characters have to go through a hard time and work their way through it. Because I remember once, and you'll enjoy this, I think, a woman said to me, she had read my memoir, Kitchen Privileges, and she said, oh, I envy you so much. She said, you've had such a hard time so often in your life. She said, you know, I had the most wonderful parents. We always lived very well. I married the most wonderful man, and we have the most perfect children. She said, nothing bad ever happened to me, so I can't write a book.
And you've had some.
I said my heart is bleeding.
Right, you were down. I mean, you were down to your last dollar before you wrote Where Are the Children? Isn't that true? I mean, you were very strapped for money.
Well, I mean, I had five kids to support. I had two in law school, two in college, one in a private girls' school. I was writing and producing radio shows. But I was living from paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
And the day the paperback sale came in for Where Are the Children, I had sold the book in March for $3,000. But then the paperback sale was $100,000, of which I get half. The publisher gets half.
Right.
But the kids were home, and my one son was up in Dartmouth that summer. He was in the summer term. But the others were there. And I said, I've got to tell you guys that we're going to have to do the one thing I didn't want to do, and that's second mortgage the house. That's the way my mother lost the house. But I said, it's the only way I can pay the tuition bills, because they were all sitting on my desk. And with that, we got the call that the paperback rights had sold. And boy, there was joy in Mudville.
I'll bet. Do you read, what authors do you read today? I mean, which ones do you read on a regular basis?
Well, of course, my own writers group, you can start right there. Susan Isaacs, Nelson DeMille, Linda Fairstein, Justin Scott, he writes with Clive Cussler.
Oh, yeah.
I love P.D. James. She's a wonderful writer. Ruth Reynolds is another British writer who's absolutely terrific.
Ruth Rendell, you mean?
P.D. James.
You said Ruth...
Ruth Rendell.
Rendell, okay. That's what I thought you meant.
Yeah. Yes. She's a terrific writer. And then, of course, I love nonfiction. I mean, I love historical books.
Mm.
I always did. In fact, if my first book, Mount Vernon Love Story, had been a success when it came out, you know, about George and Martha Washington, I would have been writing historical books, because I love to take historical people and bring them into, you know, use them as a background for a book.
Wow.
But when that book went nowhere when it came out, it became a bestseller 10 years ago under the new title, Mount Vernon Love Story.
Where would we be? I can't imagine where we'd be without your thriller, without your mysteries. Where would publishing be without your mysteries? I can't even imagine.
Oh, I think they'd have muddled along.
No, I don't know. I'm trying to picture a world without your books, and
Oh, that's very kind.
And I can't imagine. I mean, they've carried me through so many years and so many wonderful times. I mean, we all know that feeling of sitting down, reading a book, and just sitting and enjoying it. And that's what we can always do with your books. And that means an awful lot.
Well, it means a great deal to me. If someone says, I read your Dawn book till 4 in the morning and I was exhausted the next day, I said, well, good, you got your money's worth.
That's right. You know, you didn't get any sleep, you got your money's worth.
Can't give me a better compliment than saying, I said, I'll read just one more chapter, just one more.
Now, the fact you haven't started the next book, does that still mean it'll be out next April? Can we still look forward to it next April, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no, I'm ready to roll now. I am ready to roll.
Do you know the first sentence yet?
The first sentence?
Yeah.
No, but I know the last two words, the end.
There you go. It's wonderful.
My favorite two words in the whole...
That's great. That's absolutely great. I thought for sure you were going to tell me the first sentence right there.
I honestly and truthfully don't have it. If I had it, I would give it to you. I really would.
Is that the hardest part, the first sentence, or is there a harder part than that?
Well, it's the first 50 pages because you are getting to know the characters. And at first they're stick figures, and then they take on flesh and blood. And it's when they start doing their own thing. You know, if the book is grounded, if the plot is set, then they start to do their own thing. And you say, hey, wait a minute, you're supposed to stay in this scene. And they say, give that line to her, that's not my line. That's when writing becomes fun.
Absolutely.
When the characters know who they are and go about their own business and tell me who they are, then I'm chasing them down the block, not dragging them down the block. And that's when I know that, yes, the story is clicking.
And every character has to be, you know, they have to be different. That's the thing. When I read a book, I think, none of these characters can remind me of another character the author wrote. They all have to be distinctive in their own way. And that must be hard to do sometimes.
Well, you don't want to repeat a book. No. I remember there was an English author who was a romance writer, and I forget her name. I read her when I was 16, and that's a long time ago. But I read one of her books, and it was called Stepping Under Ladders, and it was a cute story. And then I read another, exactly the same plot, exactly,
really?
Just with different people in it.
That would annoy
And
me.
I remember thinking, oh, that's not fair. You just wrote the same book with different names on it.
And you're all about being fair with the reader, and that's the way you have to be. Your readers trust you. So,
well, readers are smart. As Bill Gross, who was the pocketbook editor years ago, and he and I were great friends. He retired. But he said, Mary, you could write the phone book once. And I believe that's true. Because, you know, if a writer starts throwing the books away, people will say, oh, she used to be so good. But, you know, it's kind of the sameness to what she writes. Try so-and-so.
Well, that's what's so great about Daddy's Gone Hunting. It's as good as any of your other books. There's no... You still have the same talent you had years ago, and that's why I loved reading your books, because I trust you. I know you can do it every time.
Well, bless your heart. I am happy that you feel that way.
You've always been with Simon & Schuster, too. You're very loyal toward your publishing company, which I find very, very nice, too. There are so many authors jumping around.
No, they were the first ones to buy me. Two publishers turned down Where Are the Children because, you know, in that book, you know that those children who were dead had been molested. It's never on camera. But as an adult, you know that. A child could read it and not realize it. but the two publishers turned it down because they said children in that kind of jeopardy might upset their women readers.
Hmm.
And Simon & Schuster, Phyllis Grant, who was then a young editor, and she was allowed to spend $3,000 in a book, and she took a chance on it.
Wow.
And bought it. And years later, I was sitting next to the chairman of Harper & Row at a dinner party, and he said, "Is there any way we could disenchant you with Simon & Schuster?" I said, "What'd you turn me down for?"
There you go. I guess he had no answer to that one.
Well, he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, Where Are the Children went to you first, and it was returned without comment."
That's it.
So moments like that are sweet in your life.
That's why you don't want to burn a bridge. He burned a bridge, and you can never go back because
Well, the point is, Simon & Schuster has been good to me. They have given me wonderful contracts. They have supported all my books. So why would I leave them for a few dollars more?
That's right.
If somebody offered me.
And they always come out with the most beautiful books. Your books are always beautiful. I mean, they always have beautiful covers and your beautiful picture on the back.
They take great and good care of me. Of course, that doesn't mean, you know, that 15 or 20 years ago when a contract was coming up, I'd go into a cocktail party with one publisher and come out with a different one.
Now, can we look forward to a Christmas book with your daughter again, do you think, in the years to come?
I don't know if we want to do one. We both were just so busy, and it's hard to write two books in 1 year. But we do want to do another one. So maybe, I won't say yes, but if we could do one this year, it would be nice, because Elvira and Reagan miss each other.
Right.
So they really should get together again.
Now, will Elvira be in the next book?
I don't know yet. It's possible. She just didn't belong in this one, but she did belong in the last one.
Well, you know what, Mary? I trust you. I know you know what you're doing. And obviously, you know what. I mean, 80 million books later, I know you know what you're doing.
Well, Elvira is a Budinsky, you know. If she wants to be in the book, she'll force her way.
That's right, and she's such a good Budinsky. I love her. She's the neighbor we all wish we had.
Yeah.
The one that's
the neighbor, the support.
The one that's always looking over the hedge at you and wanting to know what's going on in your yard, you know.
Yes, the one who says I didn't like the looks of that guy who was hanging around your house yesterday.
Do you ever like call an author friend on the phone? I mean, do you do a lot of that? Do you just sit, "I'm going to call so and so because I know them and I want to talk to them"? Do you ever do that?
You mean an old friend?
Like an author. An author friend you might know. You must have author friends.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, I talk to Harlan, you know. I talk to... I talked to friends, sure.
Harlan wouldn't let me interview him this time. I'm very upset with Harlan because his book was so good and I really wanted to talk to him about it.
And he didn't interview?
He wouldn't do it.
Why?
He wouldn't have time. He didn't have time to do it. I was very hurt, but, you know, what can I do? I got you instead.
Well, I'm glad you got me.
I know Harlan lives right close to you, too.
Oh, we're friends, yeah. In fact, when he was 21... he gave my brother-in-law his first book. He said, I know your sister-in-law is a writer. Would you ask her to read this?" And Ken opened it to about three pages, and it was full of the four-letter words. And he handed it back. He said, "Harlan, you haven't got a chance."
I think they're making a movie of his new book. I think Hugh Jackman's
going
to be in the movie.
Yes, which is wonderful. Wonderful.
He's so tall. He's like a really imposing figure. I remember.
Oh, and he's a great guy. He really is a great guy.
And you talk about a sense of humor.
he's just a terrific guy. And of course, when you get a movie, a good movie, it's so good for your books. It's wonderful, and it gives you visibility as an author. That's what I say. I just haven't had the luck to have good films made of my books.
Now, do you get to pick any of your covers at all? Do you get it? You must get some kind of say in it.
Oh, I have a say in it. Yes.
Do you always know when you look at a cover that it's the right cover? I mean, if they show you five different covers?
Oh, I will suggest, I mean, for example, Lost Years, I felt that the illustration they had was inappropriate, the first one. The one they used was excellent. But I said, no, she looks like a teeny bopper, that very short skirt. No, I guess it was the one before that. I said, the main character is a pediatrician. She's not going to be in that skirt that barely covers her bottom. I mean, that's not the image of that woman. So, but I work with the art director, and she's most cooperative and very good. And she comes up with the with an illustration, and between us, we get it right.
Right. So you always know when you have it right. It's like an author. A lot of authors will tell me they know when they have it right. They know when they've written it right. If they have to go back and rewrite, they always know what's wrong. They instinctively know when it's right.
Yeah, you can tell. The only one that I really argued about, and I know I was right, was Just Take My Heart. I did not like the illustration on that book, but they felt it was right, and I felt it was wrong, and we changed it for the paperback, which I was glad of, because I just felt the illustration didn't say anything. But that was only one in so many.
That's
and
amazing.
Most of them I have liked very, very much.
Now you're going to be at Bookend soon, right, for your new book?
Yes.
That's in Ridgewood. You always go there.
Yes, I'm there the 10th or 11th.
10th or 11th of April. Will your daughter be there with you this time, or is it just you?
Well, her book isn't coming out until later, because they feel that Carol is a very good summer read. And so they're bringing her book out later.
That's smart. There you go.
Yes, I think so. I think it's smart.
Well, we have to, unfortunately, end this. I could talk to you all day, Mary. You're just such a wonderful human being. I really mean that from my heart.
Well, thank you, David. This is fun to talk with you.
Your publicist is going to kill me for going so long, but I so enjoy talking to you. I don't want to hang up. It's been wonderful.
Well, I'm sitting in a comfortable chair, sipping a cup of tea with honey. I'm perfectly comfortable, so you are not delaying me a bit.
Do you eat while you write?
Excuse me?
Do you ever eat while you write? I'm curious what you eat while you write.
I usually break and have lunch with my husband and my secretary. Before John and I were married 17 years ago, I just have a sandwich at the desk. But since we've been married, I break for that half hour.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, the book again is called Daddy's Gone Hunting. It's from Mary Higgins. It's by Mary Higgins Clark from Simon & Schuster. It's at all your stores on April 9th. It's been a wonderful, wonderful time, Mary. You're just such a wonderful person. Thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.